I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
That's right. My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anelio. And through the magic of audio engineering, you will never know that a phone just rang.
I was just thinking that. I am John. That is Patrick. Thank you for joining us this week. I have to say it right as we get started today. Today is the day that we're recording this is Saturday, December 16th. And I did see Star Wars last night. It's going to be very hard to just keep that under wraps. So I'm just going to throw it out there because I'm assuming Patrick has not seen it yet.
Oh, no. Sure I left the company. I left the company holiday party early to make my 2:15 show.
Okay, good. Well, so maybe it'll come in. I'm not sure if JF has seen it yet, but let's introduce our guest. We are joined today by JF Dubow, who mercifully is going by his initials. he's an author. He's got a lot of projects out there, and he's got one called The Life Engineered that was published through the Sword and Laser Collection on Inkshare. So our friends Tom and Veronica. So that's exciting. I'd like to talk more about that. But JF, thanks for joining us today.
I want to apologize about the phone. I feel terrible. And for the record, I have also seen Last Jedi. I don't want to say dragged because I was really happy to go, but one of my friends basically took me to a midnight premiere on a day I was already exhausted. It was quite the experience.
It was. Yes, and there's been a whole bunch of things, John, on the internet about no spoilers. And I just have to say, fuck that, because I love the part where they rented the Serenity and the crew and got them to take them to the Battlestar Galactica to help save the fleet.
I mean, the moment they introduced the TARDIS, it really opened up the multiverse.
I know, right? Right? And then to have Rick and Morty show up. Oh, my God.
I didn't think I'd like swearing in Star Wars, but it works.
It was fantastic.
And it's a real link to why, one of the reasons why JF is on the show today. JF and I have been trying to get him on the show for a while. And one of the podcasts that I listen to is Let's Talk About Star Wars, hosted by Tom Merritt and Jenny Josephson and Grant Weinzierl. And I believe, JF, that they read one of your comments on the show, the most recent show. And I'm like, I should get JF on the show. I should email. Like, it sort of reminded me that we've been trying to get you on, and then I hadn't really contacted you in a while. So
I've heard that podcast is all about the base, all the base, no rebels.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So obviously, JF, you're a fan. And I don't think we should hijack this podcast as a Last Jedi spoiler show. I mean, if it comes up, that's fine.
That's what we'll do. And our next recording, John.
That is entirely possible.
Oh, can I be there? I have opinions.
Yeah. But anyway, JF, obviously you're a Star Wars fan if you're listening to that show. And, you know, you mentioned already that you do some podcasts. So maybe at the top of the show, you could tell us a little bit about a couple of the podcasts that you do.
And tell us about The Life Engineer as well.
Yes, of course. Maybe you could start with that.
I'll start with the podcasting thing because it's not super related to anything else that we're going to talk about. I do three podcasts that are all fairly niche. Well, one of them is a writing podcast I do with my friend Paul Inman. He's the author of Ageless, and we basically, it's just our excuse to once a week get together and rant about publishing, the publishing industry, and just discuss our own projects between ourselves. We just happen to record it and pretend it's a show. it's nothing as well-structured or intelligent as what you guys do. I also have a podcast about the Blizzard game Overwatch. It's called The Overcast. I record that with my friend Amy Frost. And again, this is very much a passion show. Like, we don't really do news because there's no point in doing news in a podcast, because anything important by the time we record has been posted everywhere anyways. So we just mostly do speculation, rumors, and just talk and nerd out about the storyline and the new heroes and whatever. And it's a lot of fun. We have a good time.
So hold on.
go right ahead.
As someone who is a fan of Blizzard, mm-hmm. I love Blizzard.
As you should.
And I loved the World of Warcraft. And wow, I loved it right game. up in... right up until the point that they started doing all the microtransactions and all the bull crap. And the, when you spawn, you know, when you roll your very first hunter ever, they give you a pet. What the hell? I ran my troll hunter all the way through Alliance Lands to the dwarf starting point to get a snow leopard. You don't just give me a damn pet.
Yeah, so, no, I get it. It is very easy mode compared to the good old days.
I'm excited to see that they're going to bring back a vanilla server. I am. What is Overwatch? I've been talking to people, and I know a lot of people from the old guilds on World of Warcraft who are playing Overwatch and they love Overwatch. I've never really had anyone explain Overwatch to me.
All right. Well, the reason why my friend Amy decided to do an Overwatch podcast is because when they announced Overwatch, they presented it with this very optimistic, very Pixar looking cinematic introduction.
Yeah, with the gorilla.
With the gorilla and the two kids in the museum, and it looked it was so bright and so sci-fi and so positive and optimistic, so very different from what we see in games and sci-fi. And it turns out that it's also a first-person shooter / MOBA hybrid. And it basically ticked all the boxes in the nerd stuff I want to see in sci-fi and in a game. And at the same time, did the same thing for my friend Amy. And we were just bothering everyone around us. We'd get together to play Cards Against Humanity over the internet on Saturdays. And that's all we'd talk about for weeks and just get on everybody's last nerve about just nerding out. And we decided, you know what, let's just record this and keep doing this. We're probably the longest continuously running Overwatch podcast, even though we have almost no listeners. We've been doing it for so long. So basically the structure of the game, like I said, is basically it's a MOBA first-person shooter hybrid. It's objective-oriented. So normally the amount of kills you get doesn't really matter towards the end result. So it's all about winning objective, escorting payloads, and things like that. So already it enforces a lot more teamwork. And the thematic of the story, the part that's really important, is they're basically kind of reinventing a lot of these superhero tropes by having the story be set some random amount of time in the future after a robot uprising that humanity won. But now robots are kind of semi-integrated into society. And you have this really diverse cast of characters. Everyone that had, they all have different powers as you'd expect from a superhero setting. So it's not just a first person shooter in the sense that like all you're doing is precision shooting, but everyone in the character also has different powers, some characters you don't even need to aim because they have sort of area of effect things. So it really caters to every scale level. It's meant to be as approachable as possible. The world itself is very family friendly, which is why we don't swear on the podcast or as little as possible. Because we're trying to stay with the mood of the game, and they're really slowly developing like the story of this world, slowly revealing what the history is and what the future is going to hold for it. And everything about it is just exciting. And it very much in the spirit of what Blizzard does, the goal isn't to create the most XYZ of a thing. Like the goal is to create the most fun game, and it's succeeding. It's succeeding to the point where, I think it was last weekend, they did their preseason for the Overwatch League. And as Canadian, I'm legally obliged to be a hockey fan, but hockey is slowly becoming the NASCAR of the North, where it's kind of more boring with every game. And watching esports, especially Overwatch, was just the most exciting experience I've had watching any type of competition in a long time.
I'm glad there's two things I have to pick up on that, Jeff. So you talk about esports. I don't know if either of you watched Dark Matter, the sci-fi show that was on the Sci-Fi Channel and then on Netflix. Yeah, there's three seasons of it, and the third season is the last season. And unfortunately, they didn't know it was going to be the last season. It just got canceled. So it does sort of end on a cliffhanger, not a horrible one, but one where it would have been nice if they were able to wrap it up. But there's a great, so it takes place in, it's very Firefly like in the fact that it's like several hundred or a thousand years in the future, and, you know, man has colonized all the world. They never really end up in our solar system, but in one particular episode, they go back to Earth and they go back in time to our current time. And so everybody's talking about football, and they're like, you know, I don't understand what this football is. What are they talking about? And they're like, oh, it was the most popular game on Earth in this century, you know, before esports and Quidditch took over. So I love that they make it esports and a Quidditch joke at the expense of American football there. So Dark Matter is good, by the way. If you're, it's kind of a low budget one, but it's by the makers of Stargate. So if you enjoyed Stargate, and Firefly, I think it's worth watching, and it's like 13 episodes a season. But you're in talking about Overwatch, JF, you, and we also mentioned how we all saw The Last Jedi. I'm sure you saw the Ready Player One trailer, and there is an Overwatch little Easter egg in there. Did you pick up on that?
Yeah, they dropped Tracer in there, which is kind of it's one of the character playable characters, but also sort of their mascot to a certain degree. And she's a fun character. Mm. Kind of difficult to play. I'm not good with her.
Yeah. I just, and that was sort of exciting, because even though I don't play that game, I thought it was pretty cool that they dropped her into it, because as people who have read Ready Player One, there's tons of pop culture, 80s pop culture references specifically. And from the trailer, it seems like a lot of that's going to be in there, but it seems like they're going to update it a bit as well and have this Overwatch thing in there and have this. And my friend who I went to go see Last Jedi with last night, you know, he's like, oh, that movie looks pretty cool. And I'm like, you haven't read Ready Player One? Like, what's your problem? Like, I was like, you have to read it, man. Like, this is, so JF, did you read Ready Player One?
I read through half of it, and then there was so many references to other properties. I went, I really want to watch Back to the Future now. And I just never picked it back up, because it felt was too good an advertisement for other properties.
It really is. I mean, and it's really no spoiler. I think that's pretty much what people use to advertise the book, but it's very, I mean, that's the whole conceit of the book, is that, you know, it's this genius who dies and he has this contest, and essentially you have to be, an expert in 80s pop culture trivia to understand and to sort of solve all these riddles and things like that. And so if you are of that time, which I am, it's great. It's really audiobook. Enjoyable.
The audiobook is amazing because it's read by Will Wheaton.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what I heard. I heard that's good. That's one that I actually read. I didn't listen to that one, even though I listened.
I went physical.
It's just amazing. And for the benefits of the listeners, I just want to say I've got someone outside my window, like, destroying a tree, and so I'm writing the mute button.
Yes.
But I wanted to say that because, you know, I asked the question about Overwatch, and then he gives the answer, and I didn't say anything. That sounds awesome. That really does. It sounds like an awesome game.
It is super fun, and it's a first-person shooter, so you can expect some toxicity, but as of the communities that I've played with, it's probably the least toxic, which is weird to say because there's still a lot of controversy for the level of toxicity, but it's still pretty good.
Jeff, let me ask you this, because Patrick games a little bit. He did more at one point. I don't really game at all, but I have a PS4, and, you know, at some point and then we were talking about Star Wars Battlefront in a recent episode, and Patrick's been playing through that. And that's one that I'm probably going to pick up, because I'm such a Star Wars nerd that I just need to immerse myself in as much of the material as possible. First of all, is Overwatch available for PS4? Is that like a computer game?
It's available for PC, Xbox, and PS4. Obviously, you can't play across the different platforms, and the console version is slightly different to accommodate controllers, but yeah, it's available on all the platforms.
And can you just play a story mode, or do you have to play like within the community?
You have to play within the community. It doesn't have any solo campaign or anything like that.
Okay.
There are several. There's a lot of different play modes, so there's something for everyone.
And there's a there's a Game of the Year edition for PS4, John. I've already looked at it.
Cool.
Comes with some specific skins,
Yeah, because that's one that.
Yeah, so
yeah, that's one that if I ever get into that stuff, that's one like that looks like something I would enjoy.
Yeah, and when you do the Game of the Year editions, typically it comes with a lot of the downloadable content that was kind of sprinkled out before. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah, the game doesn't really have any real DLC. Like all the stuff that you get is different skins and different bonuses, but that's always, you know, persistently available. The one thing, like even if you're not going to pick up the game, go to playoverwatch.com and check out the media they have for it. Because one of the things that's really exciting, especially for us when we do our show, is that they have animated shorts that are pretty much Pixar quality animation. You know what Blizzard does. They have comic books. They have so much supplementary material around Overwatch. You don't even really need to play to enjoy the world that they've created. And I think that's part of the genius. It's part of what makes it so exciting for us is that the game is just the hub at the middle of this huge wheel of sort of multimedia. And it's exciting.
Cool. Well, I definitely will check that out. Well, before we get on to our next section, I'd like to mention to everybody, first of all, thank everybody who backs us every month over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Couldn't do the show without you. It really makes a big difference in us getting great guests like JF and just improving the audio quality and just, you know, really, it means a lot to Patrick and I to know that there are people out there that enjoy the show so much that they are willing to give us some of their hard-earned dollars. So for those people, thank you very much. And for those of you who are listening who aren't backers, consider becoming one of our backers. Once again, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/functionalnerds and pledge an amount. You can do $1 a month. You can do $5 a month. Whatever works for you, it really helps us out. And we appreciate it. So that's that, patreon.com/functionalnerds. And now let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
JF, why don't you go first then with your pick of the week?
Actually, I'm going to go full retro for my pick of the week. Like, I've been sort of struggling what to pick, and at first I was like, oh, I'm going to pick Star Wars, and I figured, yeah, everybody's going to pick Star Wars. So actually, I'm just going to point people to one of my favorite books. It's an old book. Clive Barker, who is known for mostly for doing the Hellraiser franchise, writes obviously horror, but while he's well known for things like Hellraiser and Nightbreed, things that have a lot of gore, some creative monsters and things like that, he's written a handful of much deeper, much more interesting, much more literary horror books, such as Imagica, which is a 1,000-page brick, and the two books of the arts, The Great and Secret Show and Neverville. And my very favorite book in the whole wide world is a book called Galilee, which basically tells the story of a very Kennedy-esque dynasty and their rivalry against a family of ancient eternal gods, the rivalry dating back to the American Civil War. And it basically, both families are kind of on the decline. The Kennedy and analogs, if you will, are sort of falling to their own hubris and their own decay. Meanwhile, the family of gods have lost some of their more important members, and the matriarch of this family of gods asks a sort of half-breed, a half-human, half-god, to chronicle their history before they all vanish. And as he's chronicling this history, he finds these very important, interesting facts about both families that could somewhat reconcile. And it all leads back to this estranged prodigal son of these gods called Galilee, who's kind of, I don't want to say cursed, but tasked with, can we say, entertaining the concubines and wives of the Kennedy analog family. And it's a very weird concept and relationship between these two powerful families, powerful in very different ways. And it's written in such beautiful and interesting ways that it's a riveting book. And although it's decades old, I rarely recommend it because I rarely think of recommending it, but I was out of ideas today and I figured, you know what, might as well plug my favorite book.
That sounds great. Yeah, no, I think it's always good to bring back some of the things that were meaningful to us. And I think that's the stuff that really people want to hear. Because if it's a new book that everyone's into, or if it's a new TV show, you know, they've heard a lot about it. But if it's something, a nugget that they maybe haven't heard of before, I think it's, yeah, I think it's always great. So awesome.
It's certainly not because I'm so far behind on current media that I couldn't think of anything interesting.
Oh, I understand you there. But that's great, Jeff. Cool. Excellent pick. I'm going to go next. And as our listeners know, I am a big Brandon Sanderson fan. And I, starting this year, I was pretty behind on a lot because he's so prolific. He writes so many books. And much of his material is in the Cosmere, which is this universe that he writes in. But it's, they're all these separate entities that exist within it where they're not really connected, but he's always hinted at how they will be connected at some point, because Brandon Sanderson is primarily a fantasy author. And the pick that I'm going to give today is Arcanum Unbounded, the Cosmere Collection. This is about a 600-700 page book that is a collection of all of Brandon's short stories that take place within the Cosmere universe. And when I say short stories, most of them are about 100 pages long. They're really a collection of novellas is really what it comes down to.
I was going
to
ask, Brandon Sanderson short stories. Okay.
Yeah. He writes as he tells a story. I think it's in the book, or maybe I read it in a blog post, but he and George R. R. Martin were doing a signing together, and George R. R. Martin does a lot of editing still and does a lot of short story collection editing and anthologies. And at one point during the signing, George R. R. Martin asked, like, hey, do you write short fiction? And Brandon's answer was, I write long short fiction. So I think Patrick can relate, because I know Patrick will attempt to write a short story and it ends up being 100,000 words. I think the Brandon Sanderson has the same issue. He's like, I want this to be an 18,000 word short story, and it ends up being a 40,000 word short story.
And there's nothing less productive or helpful than taking a 3,000 to 5,000 word short story to a critique group and having the critique group going, I think this works better as a novel.
Yes. Right. That seems to happen quite a bit when some people who are just more inclined to write longer fiction try to write short fiction. But what's fantastic about this collection, because I am Brandon has a new novel out called Oathbringer, which is the third volume in the Stormlight archive, which I have not read that one yet. That's a 1200 pager that I have not gotten to yet, but that is next on the list. But I'm up to date on everything that is within the Cosmere. So I read both Mistborn trilogies. I read all the other Stormlight Archive books. I read the two Elantris. I read pretty much everything else. So reading this short story collection, what's fantastic is there is a sort of prelude to each short story written from a kind of known character in the universe's point of view. And it's just a little two-page prelude, but it starts to show the connections between all of his books. And there's like star charts and where all these planets are, even though there is a fantasy setting. So you're starting to see, he gives the first hints of like how this series is connected to this series and how the other one is connected to that, and how the magic system on this planet is related to the magic system. He doesn't like spell it all out, but it's pretty awesome. If you're a fan of Sanderson, the stories themselves are great. Really good stuff. And I enjoyed them on their own, but then having all of that connecting material was wonderful. So if you like Brandon Sanderson, the only thing is you kind of will get more out of this if you've read all the other books. So it's like, you got like 10 to 15 books you got to read to really get as much as you can out of this. So if you're a fan, go and get it. It's fantastic. So Arcanum Unbounded is what it's called. And I loved it. And it's making me hyped to get to Oathbringer. So that's my pick. Patrick, what is yours?
Well, I think that if we were all being honest, we would all pick The Last Jedi.
Correct.
And we're all trying not to, which I think is hilarious. So I'll just say that everybody should go see The Last Jedi. You know, it's kind of our underground pick. That's also our not underground pick. So
yeah, when you do the show notes, just put like you know, Last Jedi, Last Jedi, yeah. Last Jedi, and then put the next thing down.
So my other pick is going to be The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
And this, I'm very excited to hear your opinion because this is on Amazon, correct?
This is an Amazon original. It's by same, it's by Amy Sherman. I can't remember her last name. Palladio, something. It's the same lady who created Gilmore Girls.
Oh, okay, cool.
And it's about a wife in the 1950s. She is part of a very Jewish family in New York. And her husband wants to be a comedian. And she is trying to help him be a comedian. And he leaves her. And then she becomes a comedian. And it is absolutely a wonderful show. And you get her parents are Tony Shalhoub. And I forget who the mother is, but you know her if you see her. She was Alan's ex-wife on that show with Charlie Sheen. She's been in a ton of different things. So she plays the mom. Tony Shalhoub is the dad. You have tons of other character actors and people that you will recognize throughout the whole show. Alex Borstein is the club runner. She runs the club, the Gaslight, in the village, and who just loves Mrs. Maisel and kind of gives her break. And it's about the struggle of, you know, she is broken up from her husband. She's got two kids. She's got her mother and father who are very demanding of her, and they want certain things for their daughter, and they things have to appear well. So they can't tell people that her husband left her. They have to tell them that he is on a long business trip. You know, stuff like that. You have his family that are very unhappy that he's split up, and you, it's just, it's a really good show. It's very well written. The dialogue is stellar. It is on par with Gilmore Girls, if not better. And one of the things that I always have said is that Gilmore Girls had great dialogue. It's just as, you know, zippy and snappy and wonderful. It's just a great show and very funny. Very funny. Her observations about her family or her husband, you know, the comedy that she does is fantastic, and it keeps getting her arrested.
That's great. I'm really happy to hear that, because this just points to what we bring up a lot. There's so much stuff out there, because I saw just like a little bit about that, and I haven't really been watching much on Amazon recently, so I haven't really seen the ads too much, but I guess I've seen it pop up in the what's coming next month to Hulu and Amazon and like all those blog posts. And I'm like, that sounds interesting. I'll probably never get to it, but that sounds interesting. But now that you actually give me a little bit of the backdrop on it, definitely would like to check that out. That might be one my wife and I would enjoy watching.
I think that is entirely possible. I love the fact that she discovers Red Fox in an underground comedy record store. So they have a record store, and then under the record store is the like blacklist, all the stuff that they can't give you up top. And that's when she discovers Red Fox, and she starts listening to Red Fox albums. And this is the 50s, right?
Right.
And she becomes friends with Lenny Bruce.
Nice.
And it's just, it's really good. It's really good. That's all I can say. Go watch this show. It's worth your time. I want to say it's only 8 episodes.
Yeah, it's, I love that we're getting sort of, everything is sort of going to that. And I shouldn't say it this way, but you could compare it to a lot of the British kinds of things. It's like, you know what? However many episodes it is, this is what it is. We don't need 22. We don't need 13 or whatever the sort of arbitrary amount is. If you have 8 awesome episodes, bam, I'm happy. That's, you know, I think we've seen that where there's certainly with like the Marvel shows on Netflix where they're 13 episodes. And by the time you get to episode 9, you're like, they could have started wrapping it up now, I think. You know, a lot of those Marvel ones, as good as they are, I feel like some of those seasons are 2 or 3 episodes.
Well, you don't have to worry about that anymore because they're all moving to Disney's new streaming service.
Oh, that's another conversation too. There we go. Cool. Well, that sounds great, Patrick. I'm glad you recommended that one, because now I'm going to put that on my list. swinging back to JF, I think the thing that we have to ask you more than anything else is The Life Engineered. It's published by the Sword and Laser Collection. And we know Tom and Veronica. We've been, they've been on our shows. We've been on some of their shows. How did you go about getting The Life Engineered published through them and through Inkshares?
Actually, what happened is I'm also a huge fan of Sword and Laser. I've been listening to Sword and Laser for a long time. I'm going to make it sound like I'm actually doing things with my life by saying I'm too busy to participate in the book club, which is a lie. I'm just too distracted. So when they announced that they were, when they mentioned on the show a few years back that they would be sort of endorsing a book collection on Inkshares and through this contest, I had a book that I had just very recently self-published called The Life Engineered. I was mostly just giving it away on Kindle out of curiosity to get some feedback and sort of build my name and all that. You know the drill. And I signed up to Inkshares, and I was a bit curious whether it was a genuine publishing house or indie publishing house, or whether it was kind of a more of a vanity press sort of thing. So I did my investigation and I talked to their CEO at the time, Jeremy Thomas, and really got a good idea of what their point of view and their approach was, and what, you know, mostly I was impressed by their love of books and publishing, that they were not in this just to be a book mill and a glorified printer. For those who don't know, the principle behind Inkshares is that it's they call it crowdfunded publishing, because you pre-order books before they're published, and if they reach a certain amount of pre-orders, they'll go through the publishing system. The publishing that they do is very professional. They distribute through Ingram. They used to employ Girl Friday Production, which works with other publishers, and it's you get an editor, you get a cover design, everything that you expect from a publishing contract with a traditional publisher. The only thing is that instead of having a slush pile, they let the public decide which books get published by voting with their money. So I participated. I wasn't expecting much. I campaigned to get as many pre-orders as possible. And I did manage to get in the top five books that would get published at the time. I think I was third or fourth. So I knew I was going to get published. And then Tom and Veronica did me the absolutely incredible honor of picking my book, and also I think it's Jim McDaniel's Unattractive Vampire, as their two picks to be part of the Sword and Laser collection, which honestly I didn't have much hope that it would get published to begin with, but to have that Sword and Laser collection crest on the cover of my book is just a huge honor. Like I'm going to carry that badge for a long time.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I think that is so, when you have a brand that will sort of validate you in a lot of ways, it's going to get you in front of so many more people. And Sword and Laser has so many listeners and who trust Tom and Veronica. So many of them are going to be like, well, I like Tom and Veronica, and if they think this is good, it's probably pretty good. So let me check it out. They're kind of like the Oprah Winfrey of science fiction publishing.
And you get a book, and you get a book, and you get a book.
Well, they have a Patreon level for that now. For On Sword and Laser, they have a Patreon level. I think it's the Lem Club, where they send out some books to people.
Nice.
So, oh, that's cool.
So you do get a book.
They're actually good about, you know, having levels that they actually do stuff with.
Oh yeah, definitely.
As opposed to us who have a Patreon and we have levels, but it doesn't really even matter anymore. But that's great. I'm excited for you, and I'm sure that really helped get your head. Now, have you noticed sort of an increased presence in terms of book sales and just notoriety since then?
Yes. My path is a bit bizarre and offbeat, because Life Engineered, while not necessarily a flop, isn't necessarily the groundbreaking success that, say, The Martian is. Since the sales figure are fairly public, I'm a bit under 3,000 units sold. But it is critically doing fairly well. It was nominated for the Dragon Awards. It got nominated for the Canadian Kobo Emerging Writers Awards. So it's, and obviously it's in the Sword and Laser collection. So it's a book that is doing, like, it's appreciated on a critical level, I guess. But what it did do is it got me the attention of some people in the greater LA area, shall we say, who, while not interested in purchasing the rights for the book itself, did ask my publisher if I had anything else that I was working on. And that started opening doors to my second book, which nice. Is doing fairly well.
Nice.
Again, not the Martian level, but I hate sounding like that guy who's bragging about things, but I don't have that many successes to sort of lean on. But the second book did get optioned last October, but in October of 2016. And so it's got that going for it. Woo-hoo. And right now we're working on publishing the sequel for it. I'm currently crowdfunding the sequel for Life Engineered. So just from that one start, from having that credibility, that confidence boost of being in the Sword and Laser collection, and having people that I look up to say, yes, this is a good book, it's not just how the industry perceives me that kind of changed, but mostly how I perceive myself, being able to say, well, okay, I've got this sort of success that I can lean on to do my next thing, and then the thing after that, and always have the confidence to keep creating, which is it's a crutch that's necessary to be able to carve your way into an industry that's becoming more and more complicated and more demanding.
Let me ask you this question about the it getting optioned. Well, what book is that that got optioned? What's the title of that book?
So in the real world, I'm a marketing director. So I have a very keen eye for branding and for keeping a consistent brand, so that if you know that if you're going into a particular genre, you should probably stick to it so you can build your name in that genre. So after the sort of reasonable success of my debut science positive and optimistic science fiction novel, I decided to write a horror book and go completely left field. The book is called A God in the Shed, and it's, yeah, not at all like my first book, because I'm not good at branding myself, apparently. I like to write what I like to write, and it just happened to not be the same genre.
I'm exactly the same way. I'm the director of digital marketing. And I hate with a passion pseudonyms. I understand the old school thinking behind them, where someone like Chris Rush has four or five different pseudonyms that she writes under, and based on the name on the book, you know what you're getting.
Mm-hmm.
But I only have one name, and I want my name on everything I write, and whatever I write. I don't care.
I think in today's market, for people like you and me who are more independent writers, the brand that we're selling is less our books and more ourselves.
Yeah.
One of the things, like, I have a few friends who are aspiring writers too, and they'll talk about how they want to have a nom de plume and sort of hide their identity. And it's difficult to explain to them how almost impossible it is to do that nowadays, because the same way, like, what we've been talking about, Veronica and Tom, and the thing is, people don't consume Sword and Laser because of Sword and Laser. They consume Sword and Laser because of the personalities behind it.
Correct.
And for authors, unless you get a big deal that allows you to create a fortress out of money to protect your identity, everybody that you're going to sell a book to that's going to be aware of your work will want to a certain degree, engage with you on a personal level. You need to build that community. You need to build that readership and be engaged with it. And you can't do that behind a mask.
Yeah. I met a newbie author, someone who was just starting out, and they were easily 10 years younger than I. And just kind of talking about the landscape today. And one of the things that they were complaining about was the idea that they would have to have social media and that they would have to engage with people. and go to conventions and go to signings and this and that. And they're like, I don't want to do that. I want to be that author from the 20s and 30s that, you know, sits alone in a room drinking Scotch whiskey and smoking and never, ever, ever sees anybody and just, you know, hammers away book after book on a typewriter and sends it out and someone sells it. And I'm like, well, then build a time machine.
Yeah, I was going to say, like,
that's not how it works anymore at all.
Yeah, your first step is to learn some really fancy astrophysics because you're going to need a wormhole and you need to go back in time.
Yeah, that's not the way it works.
And I'm very much what you just described. I like very small crowds of people. I like to I do well talking either to huge crowds or small groups of close people. But I've had to done signings. I've gone to there's a lot of stuff that comes with being sort of a public figure that I don't like. I don't enjoy. I don't want to say I don't enjoy signing books because I don't want anybody to shy away from asking for a book to be signed, but I don't. It feels self-aggrandizing in a way that's uncomfortable for me, and I get a lot of anxiety from having too much attention. But at the same time, I understand that it is part and parcel of the industry. To me, the writing is the fun part, but everything else that goes around it is the work. And if I want to be able to do the fun part, I need to work.
Right.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I will say this as well, John. 90% of the time, if you don't market yourself, no one else will.
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
sure. And as people know, Neilio for me is a pen name of sorts. And in the past couple of years, I've been sort of melding my real name and my sort of pen name, even though I'm a musician. And I'm still haven't figured that out yet. It's like I'd almost like to start over with my real name. But at the same time, it's like, well, yeah, but I have two albums published under this other name.
And that's still a reality today, because that's why Shauna McGuire has Mira Grant.
Right.
Is because the debut novel for Shauna McGuire didn't do very well. And in the old school marketing landscape of the traditional publishing industry, no one would buy a second book. Like, none of the book buyers would buy a second book from Shauna McGuire, or they wouldn't buy one at the levels that the publishers needed. So the publisher's like, okay, we want to publish this other book, but we're going to do it as a debut novel for a new author. So what name do you want? And she picked another name and they started over.
Right. But so she does some as Mira Grant, some as Shauna McGuire.
And what's funny is when people who are huge fans of Mira Grant find out that there's other books under Shauna McGuire, they typically don't like those books. And Shauna has talked about this because the Mira Grant books are different.
Right.
They're very different.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I know for me, a lot of it is just trying to keep a little bit of separation between my personal life and whatever sort of public internet life I have. And I think increasingly those things are melding, but I'm still a little uncomfortable with it because I'm friends with a lot of people that I work with now on some social media, but I still don't think they know that I put this music out and do this podcast and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, ooh, that song has a swear in it. I don't know. like I was going to put my Batman Smell song out there on Facebook the other day, even though it's like many years old at this point. And I'm like, oh, it talks about Batman and Robin being drunk. And I don't know if I feel like dealing with that. Okay, I guess I won't put it out there. So it's weird, you know. But anyway, that's another whole story.
Oh, I get what you're saying, though. Like, no one at my workplace knows that I write except my bosses, because they need to be aware of some of these strange vacations that I'm going to be taking.
right.
But it is a strange landscape.
I send out an email to everybody at my work. I'm just like, hey, I got a book out. Go buy it.
Go buy my book, everybody.
That would be the smart thing to do. Like, it's guaranteed that there are some people in my workplace that would either be glad to encourage me or that would like the genre that I write in. But for some reason, I'm dumb and don't want to mix those two things. I don't want people at work to ask me about my books.
I sent out that email, and a lot of people were very, very supportive, and which was great. And there was one who came. She's brand new to the company, and she is she's an architect, and she kind of works on our designs for our retail locations. And she will tell you right off the bat that she's a millennial. And she belongs to like these millennial clubs and weird stuff that I've never heard of before. Anyway, she comes to me and she's like, so you have this book and it's about a wizard. I'm like, yeah. She says, well, I really liked Harry Potter. And I said, okay, this is not Harry Potter. It says there's like only one child in this book and they don't get a lot of screen time. You know, this is a very adult book. And I kind of explained it a little bit to her and she did end up buying the book, which was awesome, you know, but it was just kind of interesting. I want to say out of 50 people at my headquarters, at our office, maybe 10 people bought the book, but that was 10 people I wouldn't have got if I hadn't sent the email.
Yeah, it's still a pretty good percentage. Though.
Yeah,
it's not bad. A very good percentage.
That's 20%. 20%. That's not bad at all.
Yeah. That's 10 people. They'll be telling their friends, hey, I have a buddy at work that wrote a book and I read it and it's not bad. You should check it out. You like wizards, right? And then a bunch of Harry Potter fans are reading your book.
Yeah, that's what you hope for, right?
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, we are coming to the end of our time. JF, it was a pleasure having you on the show. And I encourage everybody to go and do a little Google search for JF. His last name is Dubeau and it's spelled D-U-B-E-A-U. You will get to his website. You will get to his Twitter and all that good stuff. And you can find out about his books and all of his other projects that he has going on. And before we wrap it up, JF, if you know, we talked about The Life Engineer and some of your things. Are there other projects that you want to let our listeners know about before we get going?
Well, right now, my big thing is trying to promote the sequel to Life Engineered. It's not necessary to have read The Life Engineered to appreciate the sequel. It's they're kind of standalone. But you can, if you go to inkshares.com, you can find both of these books. Life Engineered is available for 99 cents on digital at Inkshares right now. So if you want to check it out, please do so. I think it's a good book. It's at least it's good enough to have been in the Sword and Laser collection. And if you want to check out the sequel to it, which is also going to be in the Sword and Laser collection, or so Tom has guaranteed me by writing on email as I begged him, you can check it out at inkshares.com/arch-android.
Sweet. And you mentioned some of your, I'm doing quotation air quotes, but some of your vacations. Will you be appearing at any conventions coming?
Absolutely. I'm going to be at StokerCon in Rhode Island in March. I'm probably going to do the Montreal Comic Con for anybody in the area.
Are they allowed to call it a Comic-Con?
I don't know. They still are, though. So I guess they haven't been sued yet. They'll inevitably get sued, I assume.
And or they'll get a cease and desist letter. Yeah, they'll get a cease and desist letter.
Probably. I don't know exactly how much they want to do the cross-border suing thing. I'll definitely be at Dragon Con this summer, and I'm still determining the rest of things. Like, I think Worldcon is in San Jose this year, so I might try to go there too.
It is, yes.
Yeah.
Do you know the way to San Jose?
you couldn't resist it, could you, Patrick? You couldn't resist
an itch.
World Fantasy, I know, is going to be in World Fantasy is going to be in Baltimore, I believe, this year. That's one I'm looking at. I know Patrick and I are thinking about that.
I don't have a fantasy property. Too far from me. So I might go to Baltic.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't really make sense for you.
I wish it did.
Balticon's good. I've been there a bunch of times. Yeah. Balticon's good. If you haven't made it out to that one, especially if you're doing the podcasting, there's a nice podcasting community there as well.
I keep thinking I need to go to Gen Con's writer's track thing.
Gen Con. Yeah, that I always hear is good too.
Gen Con. That's a ton of fun.
Yeah, that I heard is good. That's Wisconsin.
Indiana now. I believe. Indianapolis now.
Oh, yep. Indiana. Okay.
For a few years.
Cool. All right. Well, yeah. All right. Well, Jeff, that's awesome. For us, once again, dig the show, consider going over to patreon.com/functionalnerds and backing us with a monthly amount. That would be awesome if you did that. So thank you. And Patrick, anything you want to leave our listeners with today?
Go see The Last Jedi.
Yes. All right, everybody. Have a great week and we'll see you next time.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
here. It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.